Godfrey's Ghost is, at its heart, a book about my father, Arnold Ridley, written for my son. Although my father died in 1984, my son Christopher, who was too young to know him, can see his grandfather whenever he chooses. Chris is, of course, aware that while his grandfather was Private Godfrey was not his grandfather. But a well-drawn television character appears so complete, I think, that sometimes it must be difficult to distinguish the actor from the man. The thought disturbs me. Yet there are worse ways to be remembered. As a character, Private Godfrey, the oldest member of the Warmington-on-Sea platoon, has always been a Dad's Army favourite. Gentle, fumbling, innocently willing, Godfrey was particularly popular among the very old and the very young. "My sister cried last night when the bank manager was rude to you," wrote a 10-year-old boy. "He shouldn't have been, because, although you're very stupid, you do try." It was a part my father loved to play, a bear of very little brain. But as a picture of my father, the deferential, weak-bladdered bachelor, residing with his sisters Dolly and Sissy in Cherry Tree Cottage, will not serve. Which is why, does this sound absurd, I feel a need to rescue him, to prize Arnold Ridley from Private Godfrey, to free him from age and frailty, to revive and restore him. I wanted to paint a true portrait of my father for my son, for others too, including, as I have come to realise, for myself. I was born when my father was 51. It seemed to me so much of his life had been lived already. His distant childhood in Bath, the horrors of the First World War, the astonishing success of his first play, The Ghost Train. The life of a celebrated playwright, wealth and fame, rooms at Garland's Hotel, winters in Nice or Juan-les-Pins, after which an interval of alcoholism, a doomed affair, a first divorce, financial ruin, calamitous and complete. He returned to France to fight in another war. Shell shock, blackouts, nervous collapse, and then, in some ways worst of all, the writer's block that robbed him of his confidence and his craft. Through most of my childhood, he lived the hand-to-mouth existence of an ageing actor struggling for small parts, harried by bank managers, bullied by bailiffs, pursued by implacable tax inspectors. For me and for my mother, my father's triumphs were in the past. Ours was quite unlike the plush life he had known at the height of his success. As a family, we may sometimes have shared a wistful sense of what might have been and was no more, but that was all. So my admiration for my father had, and has, little to do with his public achievements. He was, for me, remarkable because he was my father, and because, faced with more than his fair share of life's vicissitudes, through love, courage, and the kind of well-grounded philosophy that doesn't recognise itself as such, he lived his life so valiantly and well. Writing about my father has brought him back to me, the loose change jingling in his pocket, his battered brown hats in the hall. I have heard his voice again, as I hope one day my son will want to hear mine.